So I guess that Brian would set the scene for the rest of us about why we're here. So in a way, I'm going to jump a little bit in. We all know, and we've heard so eloquently from Hazel earlier, why we needed to change things. So I'm going to talk about our Cork Ideas project. So it was integrated dementia care across settings, a partnership between the Mercy University Hospital and Cork Community to try to improve our integrated care for people with dementia in Cork City and its environment that would feed into the Mercy University Hospital. So I think we all took slightly different tacks for what we thought was the most important to give success to our project. So we employed a dementia nurse specialist from the very start, Mary Mannix, really to provide a mentorship and a leadership role within the hospital. And I do think that's crucial. And I think the learning from all our projects is that you need to have dementia nurse specialists in every hospital in Ireland. And then a dementia care coordinator in the community. So a little bit different to what, say, the Alzheimer's Society Dementia Advisors would be. This was a public health nurse, Siobhan Cahill, who seconded out of her job very much to help people navigate, signpost our services, work with healthcare professionals in coordinating our journey into and out of the hospital and very much working with the dementia nurse specialists so that we have a new post within the hospital and a new post within the community working together to try to give more seamless care. We employed an occupational therapist half-time for just 1 year to really lead on our environmental change, and that was Anne O'Hay. And then we also set aside a pot of money for emergency in-home respite or whatever else was needed. So where a family was in crisis and they needed a week of nighttime care, that we could provide it, where somebody needed equipment. And I think that's been really a huge learning for us as well. Sometimes that made a difference and it kept someone at home. Sometimes where a crisis had already been reached, no matter how much money you throw at a situation, when someone's gone beyond caring, it doesn't change things. And that was learning for me as well, because I thought this would make more of a difference. So what we've learned is, yes, at the right time, enhanced support is fantastic, but too little too late doesn't actually help people. And then we also put a pot of money aside for an education fund. And I have to say we haven't needed to use it because there was so much training available through the National Dementia Education Programme that we were able to use, that we were able to redivert that money. And then the really important thing is about 45 people who are members of our consortium in the hospital, in the community, who are working on this as part of their working time and after their working time, including myself, who, you know, again, critical to success is, unless the HSC suddenly has money to employ a huge rake of new people, it is about people taking on this just because they see, like Hazel has shown us, that things need to change. And so to really acknowledge all the other people who've played a role in this. This is our two websites. We have one hosted on UCC just because we can very easily update it, and one hosted on the Mercy so that any patient or family who log on to the Mercy website on the very front page, straight away they get brought to our project. So we were asked to particularly focus on four areas. So I'm going to go through these now on our progress and some of the challenges that we've met. So starting with assessment and diagnosis, because I think that is the start of the patient journey at the front door of the hospital, be it ED or the medical assessment unit. And also if you don't diagnose somebody with dementia or with cognitive impairment, or what we tend to use as a term cognitive vulnerability, if you don't make that diagnosis, then how can your pathway begin? So getting the assessment correct is very important. So Brian has already mentioned this tool called the 4ET, which is a delirium screening tool, but we know it can also be used for screening for cognitive impairment. And nationally, a national ED delirium algorithm has been endorsed by all the clinical programmes. So every emergency department in Ireland is supposed to be performing 4ET screening on everyone over the age of 65. Now, I can tell you they're not. In fact, practically no one is, probably apart from our sites. And again, I think that's what happens when you have guidelines or you have policy, you have anything else, and there isn't facilitation for people to actually carry it out, and that an excellent idea can sometimes not really translate into practice. So basically, there's a few things can happen with a 4ET. You can score zero. That means you're normal. About 50% of older people will be screened as normal. You don't need to do anything different for these people. About a quarter will screen positive for positive delirium. This is an excellent tool, and I have to say this tool was never actually validated for an ED department, and so we separately to our project but aligned to it, because I had separate research staff who validated it for the first time ever in ED, and the good news is it does work well. I'm really glad to hear that, because we were so far down the road nationally of using it, it would have been bad if we didn't, but it does. So about a quarter of people will be suspected delirium, and about 70% of those have, and this tool very rarely misses delirium, so it's really a good tool. And what we decided for our ED is that we thought about having a dementia pathway, and we thought about having a delirium pathway or algorithm, and then we thought about ED, the reality of what it's like to work there. And we went to our ED nurse manager, who said very simply, one pathway, one page. And that's what we delivered, one pathway, one page. And I think Brian has kind of alluded to this idea of cognitive impairment. In ED, you often don't know if the person has dementia or delirium or both. And we're saying they're cognitively vulnerable, and a lot of the care is actually very similar. So we put it down together to the same pathway. And you can follow the pathway as delirium, or you can follow the pathway as possible dementia or cognitive impairment. In both cases, the end result is you come down to our combined dementia delirium care bundle. And this means you're not waiting to start your pathway, waiting for a diagnosis of dementia. Once you're cognitively vulnerable, you'll get the care. And again, we have four parts to our care bundle, because the reality of ED is people didn't want to hear 10 different things to do. So they are that the people get assigned to our dementia cubicle, and I'll show you pictures of that in a moment. That the carer is very much encouraged and facilitated to stay. We make sure we get a clear history from the carer, particularly medication history, because we realised this was a problem, that somebody who has memory problem couldn't remember their meds, couldn't remember their past history, and ED staff were taking them on face value when they said, I think I'm not taking any meds, and it turned out they were taking 10. So the carer and the involvement of the carer, that's been really challenging because our cubicles are tiny. You can hardly fit chairs around them, but you know, wherever we can, we're facilitating that. Hydration and nutrition, again, Hazel showed why that's so important. So we have a healthcare assistant in ED, and they are now particularly being targeted and signposted to the person with dementia, regularly offered food and fluids, and it being documented. And then the last thing is pain assessment, because we know a huge amount of people with dementia come in with pain, and they often don't express very well that they have the pain. So now our staff on admission and every 4 hours need to do an objective pain assessment with pain AD. And we thought if they got those four core things right, then that's a great start and it's feasible. So we've started piloting it just this month. We were told December will be your month to pilot the pathway, probably the worst month in the year, but yet it is going okay. And we think if we can successfully pilot it this month, then it can be done at any time. So that's our ED. So at the end of being an ED, people will either be more or less cognitively normal, possibly dementia, some kind of cognitive impairment, and probably delirium. I wanted to show you this just to summarise what I've said, because I think this is important to know the workload that this generates. About 50% of them will have no cognitive impairment, 24% possible delirium, and 25% possible dementia. And I just wanted to highlight here the possible dementia is people who score 1, 2, or 3 on the 4AT. And I'm not sure what the other projects have decided to do, but we had a real issue with people who scored 1, because 18% of all older EDs will score 1, and probably only about 10% of them have dementia. And we know this because we did expert diagnosis with our people when we validated the tool. And we felt that was a lot of workload for only 10% gain, whereas the people who score 2 or 3, smaller numbers, much higher rates of dementia. So pragmatically, we have decided not to go further with the people with 1. So our pathway kicks in where you score 2 or 3. And we know we're excluding a small number of people with dementia, but they probably can navigate the system fairly well, and we'll pick up on them later. So these are the pragmatic decisions you have to make to try to make it feasible in the real world with real world challenges. So that's where we're targeting. So then that's ED. So the person is discharged home, and if they're discharged home, now the ED staff have to give details of the cognitive impairment, flagging up to the GP that this needs to be investigated further. If they're admitted, they follow a ward-based integrated care pathway. So we've been piloting this on one of our medical wards since June. So we started off actually piloting this side,
which is the person with known dementia, because we felt that was an easier place to start. And I appreciate this is a little hard to read, but basically there's a care bundle, and it's a little more detailed. It incorporates mobility, it incorporates getting to know the person using a patient passport, and it incorporates daily delirium screening. Because nationally, that's, I see Deirdre Lang there in the audience nodding at me, this nationally we're also going to have a delirium algorithm for use on general medical wards. So we wanted to fit in with what we knew was coming down the tracks. So care on the ward, very important, with a care bundle, very much focused on nursing care here, I have to say. And then referral, all patients refer to an occupational therapist, which wasn't happening, and we felt they're the key group that take the holistic multidisciplinary approach, and then refer to other specialities as clinically indicated. Commencing discharge planning early, and then the really important is this post-discharge communication. And again, Brian alluded to that as well. So at the point of discharge, that the discharge letter is copied to the public health nurse, which usually wouldn't happen, and that it updates the GP and the public health nurse about the state of the person's dementia now. Perhaps we're taking more of a palliative care approach, perhaps they're on a waiting list for long-term care, but to update them on what's been happening and what changes have come about. And then we also have indicators for the need for specialist follow-up. So where there's a flag that this person needs to get back into memory services, wherever that's provided. So we've been piloting that and tweaking it, and we have that side of it really fairly well worked out. And we've just last month started on the possible dementia people, which is down this side here. And this brings in the medical doctors a little bit more, so that they have to help us with some of the screening to see if this person got a possible dementia, and then some indications of which specialist might be best to see the person. Because what we found was often all of us were being called, neurologists, psychiatry, geriatricians, we were all being called to see the same person, or none of us were being called. So now it's a little bit more laid out. And again, the dementia nurse specialist, Mary Mannix, has a key role in advising on, you know, who might be the best person to come to see somebody, and making sure that people aren't missed. If they're discharged, that we will follow them up. And for most people, we're using a pathway of deferred diagnosis, which is where in hospital, when you're very unwell, it's the last thing maybe that you or your family want to hear is that you have dementia, but we don't want you to fall through the cracks. So we want you to come back to an outpatient and in the correct setting have your diagnosis disclosed to you then. So again, that's, you know, as I said, for the person with known dementia, quite well established on one ward, and we've only started here, and then after Christmas we're rolling out onto our second ward. We're literally going to roll out ward by ward until we have the whole hospital covered. So just focusing a little bit then on hospital avoidance and supported discharge, and I want to introduce you to a hub that's working very well for us, even though I realise everywhere will have its own solutions, and it's the Memory Intervention and Support Clinic. So everyone's very familiar with memory clinics or with medical-led clinics where you have a diagnosis, you're seen, maybe you're seen diagnosed and discharged, maybe you're seen once a year or whatever. But we realised there was a huge need for support in between, and it was actually Ronan O'Queeve, a specialist registrar in geriatric medicine at the time, who's now working in Galway, set up a memory intervention and support clinic with an advanced nurse practitioner and occupational therapist. And when we were developing this project, we suddenly realised this really hadn't been tapped into for its full potential, and maybe some of the governance and the pathways needed to be looked at. And what we realised here, we had a fantastic hub for that community hospital interface. So we have a team which is an advanced nurse practitioner in older persons, an occupational therapist, our local Alzheimer's Society dementia advisor, and our dementia care coordinator, who all will work together. And it can be anything from complex case management, which is where I think we see the huge role, where a crisis is looming and we have a chance to work together as an MDT, or just notifying people about the Alzheimer's Cafe, which is for peer support, the Alzheimer's Society service, memory gym for a patient who's motivated to try to improve their cognition, community liaison support, which would be more of a nurse-led continence, wound care, etc. So it's really that hub of bringing it all together. And a patient can be under the care of geriatric services or under the care of psychiatry services, and they can access it. So it's really proved a great hub, and that's where we've embedded our dementia care coordinator. so that the role was very much integrated into part of our services. So I think, you know, our link between our nurse specialist in the hospital and other services in the hospital and the team out in the community really has worked very well. But of course, it can't change the world. At the end of the day, if you don't have home helps and you don't have home care packages, there's only so much you can do through integration. But, you know, having said that, it is a great first start, and at least it means that we're all on the same page and this issue of communication and everything is dealt with. Just moving on to another aspect of quality of experience, just to run through our environmental changes. So on our geriatric ward, we've already totally refurbished an O'Hare occupational therapist, did a huge amount of work with this. So this was our nurse's station, very busy, very cluttered. There's a red clock there. You can't see it against the red wall. And this is what it looks like now, much more streamlined and refurbished. This was our day room. I called it bleak, so not even drab, bleak. And this is what it looks like now. So a lot of these were donated by local companies. So people will get involved if they're asked. This was our flooring, very unsuitable for a person with poor vision or cognitive impairment because they thought these were steps, and now we've refurbished it with a better soundproofed and cushioned floor. This was our toilets before. You know, white looks very clean and hygienic. I can see why hospitals go for it, but look at the contrast, and these all cost the exact same. And then we've wayfinding on our doors, so you know you're in the sunflower room or whatever. This is our dementia cubicle, so a little bit tighter on space. There's a curtain there, so we don't have a wall on the other side. It's two people on either side of a curtain, but I suppose the important thing is it's a visual cue to the staff for that person, and there's wayfinding to the toilets. Our next step is our link bridges. We're very lucky in our hospital. It's over two parts, linked by link bridges on two floors. But we found that this link bridge is very unwelcoming and bleak. And if you look at the end, who would want to walk down to the end and into that dark hole at the end? So we've now applied for funding through our charity link to our hospital to try to refurbish that and to refurbish the bleak sitting area. We want all our patients up and active and dressed and out on the link corridors looking at the fantastic view of the river. And so that's our next project. Just to really fly through education and training, our target was that about 700 staff would be trained. Our first steps were existing staff, so a huge amount had general dementia awareness. About 50 had four-hour dementia education training from the National Dementia Education Programme, and 10 have been trained as dementia champions. We now have embedded induction training. So I do pre-intern induction training for all interns in graduating from UCC. And then we do a second round for people coming into the Mercy Hospital. And three times a year, all new staff into the hospital have induction training. And again, we've embedded dementia and delirium training. And then just to focus on one-off events, we've found these really helpful as well. So in 2015 and 2016, we held a full Dementia Awareness Week. And that's really been a great focus. So this year we had Cathy Ryan, a person with dementia, to come along and talk to staff and motivate staff. And I think these one-off events work really well, so to keep them in mind. In the community, we have had a parallel training session. So again, awareness sessions, champions module training. So kind of offering that range of what people need. Siobhan Cahill, our dementia care coordinator, has developed what she calls a dementia education and resource booklet. So it's every single course that you might do, how you do it, what's the fee, is it online, and things like that. And she's shared that with Mary Manning in the National Dementia Office. And the one thing that we didn't touch on too much was kind of GP training or primary care team training, because we're very lucky we have Tony Foley, lead of the Prepared Project in UCC and in Cork, and so we knew we could piggyback on all his hard work for our project. So Siobhan Cahill, our dementia care coordinator, has been involved in some of the curriculum for the primary care team, and Tony has included it within his. And then the very last quality improvement piece I wanted to talk about was volunteers. We did a lot of work interviewing patients and carers and staff about how they'd feel about volunteers, because we never had it in our hospital. And we have two sets of volunteers currently in the hospital, SAGE volunteers. This is a national advocacy group. We were one of the pilot hospital sites for SAGE, and also hospital volunteers. So these were people who wanted to contribute to the hospital non-financially. And I think the really important learning piece here is we have an expert volunteer coordinator. This was a retired staff member who knew all about Garda vetting, who knew all about manual handling, and who's been able to coordinate and train the staff And so we have just coming on board the last few, so we'll be up to 18 volunteers. We had some teething problems. First, a lot of times they were turned away from wards. People said, oh, I don't think I have anyone here who needs your care. So we had to do a lot of promotion. We branded them with T-shirts as well as ID badges to really, and think of novel ways to use them. So that's really gone from strength to strength in the last few months. So just we were asked to think about the enablers of change. And I think for us, the fact dementia has been a national agenda item has really helped. And also the availability of national dementia education that we can all use. I think the Mercy did have special qualities. It's a medium-sized hospital. That makes it easier to effect change, really supportive management, and a really good ethos of care. I feel it was a little easier for us than it might be in some particularly large and maybe a bit more impersonal hospitals. Dedicated staff of the project, certainly having, you know, staff who had protected time to do this were critical. Leading out with the dementia awareness, getting everyone on board first before you try to change things. Regular updates because staff do move on. And then finally, our fundraising actually really helped to raise awareness. And I would say to everyone, think about fundraising as part of your awareness raising. So this is our acute hospital consortium and our community hospital consortium to thank everyone involved.